Hello and welcome to the German New Medicine Stories podcast. May listening bring liberation and lightness to your healing journey. Please note that nothing that I or any of my guests say here is or should be misinterpreted as medical information or advice. These are personal stories, not prescriptions. So today I'm going to share more of my personal stories. We'll see how many I can get through before I have to leave to get on a call. So I'm going to start with lifelong constipation. So for people who are new to German New Medicine, constipation and diarrhea are both related to what we call an indigestible morsel conflict that's affecting either the small intestine or the large intestine. And within the two-phase pattern, so we have the conflict active phase, and then we have the healing phase that happens after the resolution. Constipation occurs in the conflict active phase, and diarrhea will occur in the healing phase. And so they're actually, you know, one symptom in essence, but people, you know, tend to experience one more than the other often, just because of how they're coming on or not off or off the track. So it's okay if all of that languaging is still confusing for you, you'll get the story. So for me with chronic constipation, you know, that's fluctuating over my life, but for as long as I can pretty much remember, you know, this is a hanging conflict for me where I do enter resolution at times, but I'm mostly, you know, in the conflict active phase. And, you know, the intensity of the constipation or the diarrhea will be in direct relationship to, you know, how intense the emotional experience is. So, and I could see that track over my life now that I know what the conflict was for me. So basically what happened, this happened like 4 months ago. This is probably one of the biggest resolutions in terms of the healing phase I went through. That I've had, I mean, maybe in my life, actually, it was very intense. What had happened was, is that, I had had over the course of, you know, the few weeks prior, many, women come to me, with constipation or diarrhea or, you know, basically a whole slew of digestive symptoms. And so had been kind of deeply immersed in the consciousness of an indigestible morsel conflict. You know, kind of as it seems to go with every symptom for me, it's like the first woman I work with around a symptom, like it takes a while for me to figure out how to translate, you know, everything that I have studied and know into like asking the right question to somebody. And, but then once you get it, it's, you know, pretty quick oftentimes, and you have like a spidey sense for it. So in these few weeks, I had many women come to me, for indigestible morsel conflicts, and I had a lot of success, a lot of resolutions. And so I was like, oh, I'm getting it. And so I sat down Sunday evening and was reviewed all the notes from, like, I don't know, it was like five or six women I'd worked with the week prior. Around indigestible morsels. And, you know, I spend a lot of time, like in a session, you know, I write a lot of notes, and what I'm listening to is people's like language and sort of sentence structure and like specific vocabulary. Because I find that, you know, you can really begin to hear people's conflicts in their language. And the more that I can pay attention to that, the more that I can go faster with future clients. So basically, I was just kind of like collating and making this, you know, big page of notes of, you know, all these phrases and words and kinds of things that I was hearing from these women. And I was feeling like, I've got it, you know, like the indigestible morsel for me, like for a long time, I was like, what in the hell does that mean? And the ways that I had read it described on Learning GNM or in the courses that I like taken, it just wasn't working for me in terms of, you know, actually applying it for myself or for other people. And so, basically what I kind of, concluded and this is my current relationship to the concept of a morsel, is that a morsel, it's anything you need for sustenance. Okay. So it's anything that you literally need to survive. Now that would have been the original evolutionary context of a morsel. But for us modern humans that we think very abstractly, it's anything we think we need to survive, which basically anything that we could want. And so the younger you are, the sort of the pool of potential morsels is smaller. And then the older you get, the whole world opens up to you, and then everything essentially can become a morsel. So, as a newborn baby, your very first morsel actually is air, right? We need the air morsel. We need to take in the air, and transform it within our body. And then maybe you could say the breast milk would be the next morsel. Maybe our mother's care and love and voice and this kind of thing. And then you're a toddler, and then a morsel becomes, literal food. It's always an option for a morsel, or toys, this kind of thing. And then, you become a teenager, you become an adult, whatever. I mean, anything can be a morsel: jobs, children, money, marriage, like thinness, beauty, aesthetic things can become morsels. Houses, boats, whatever. And then also kind of non-physical things that are more like feelings, maybe like fame or praise or respect, or like we like feel like experiences that feel like nourishment. And so you kind of think that a morsel is anything that you could take into your body, that could come into you and then become your body. And obviously originally, in a biological sense, this was purely, to become your physical body, and now it's kind of your, I don't know, symbolic body, you could say. Although you should never exclude the possibility of it being literal morsels like food, because that is common, but it's also very common for it to be, these other things I've just listed. So, and then, because we have morsel complex basically through our entire digestive tract, so then you have to take this idea of a morsel and then understand it in the context of the specific area, along the digestive tract that you're in, right? Because obviously the biological function of the mouth or the esophagus or the stomach or the smaller large intestine, these are all completely, they have different roles. And so the nature of the morsel conflict will have a different tonality to it. So the small intestine, what does the small intestine do? Well, the small intestine, it begins actually absorbing the food, okay? Or the nutrients, whatever. So it actually starts to take everything that's being digested and make it actually becomes you, basically, in the small intestine. Okay, this is where the morsel becomes your body, physical or symbolic. It's where you accept the nourishment. Okay, it's assimilated, it's incorporated into you. And so my favorite, I have a long list in my kind of notes in my notepack, that I have for the women in my course, of kind of phrases and like sentence structures and keywords that go with this conflict. But my favorite is probably one that I know through Helmut Pihlhor, who was, one of the kind of teachers, or Dr. Homer's like appointed teachers, let's say, of GNM. And the phrase is that they are taking the butter off my bread. Okay. And this is the conflict of the small intestine, which would, if you were to read it on the scientific chart, would be called an indigestible morsel conflict, maybe an indigestible anger, something like this, okay? With an aspect of lack or starvation. And it's like, what does that mean? Okay, so I think I figured it out. So this phrase, they are taking the butter off my bread. So there's two questions here. What's the butter on your bread? Okay, so to me, I think of that is that the butter on the bread is your morsel. This is the thing that you want. This is the thing that you want to assimilate, to digest, to take into yourself. The butter on the bread. Okay. And then someone, though, or something is taking the butter off your bread. Okay, and there's some kind of injustice, anger, bitterness towards whatever, whomever it is that is taking your morsel away from you. Okay, it was like, and also it's like the thing in this phrase too, they're taking the butter off my bread. It's like the morsel is already on your bread. Like, and the butter is like, you know, it's the bread's probably in your hand or on your plate or something. It's like it feels very close to becoming yours. It's not, you know, like some far off distant thing exactly. It's kind of like it's so close. You're so close to having it, okay? Okay. So there's a lot more to say, and I'm not gonna do a full lesson on like morsel here, but that's probably enough to set the stage for telling the story. So okay, constipated for a very long time. Worked with all of these women, writing this note. So this is a Sunday night. So I finished writing these notes, go to bed, lying in bed, which is where, you know, all of my aha moments come to me, lying in bed and just like feeling into the, yeah, like the consciousness, the I don't know, the feeling of this you know, indigestible morsel conflict. And I could just kind of like connect to this. I had this image of like a parasite, but not like a physical, you know, like a kind of energetic parasite, where the sensation is like it's never enough. Like I can never be satiated. Like I could just eat everything, and that's kind of this feeling that I carried for a lot of my life. Is like I just want everything. Like I want everything that other people experiencing, I want to experience it. I don't even care if it's like good or bad necessarily. I just want to know what that experience is like. And kind of, yeah, just this sense of like, even though my life is, you know, kind of objectively wonderful, like it's never enough. And kind of, yeah, being like tortured by that feeling of having everything, you know, like wonderful in my life, and not actually really lacking for anything at all. And yet still having this kind of like insatiable, hungry ghost, you know, of like, but it's not enough. Nothing is ever good enough. And you know, think about these words, like it's enough, satiated. These are all like digestive words, right? We say, I've had enough to eat. And so, or, you know, I'm not satiated. I'm not fulfilled. These kinds of words. Okay. And anyway, so I was like really feeling into that, like, wow, like I have that so big in my life, like this feeling of it's never enough. And, you know, I could just eat all day, not physical food, but, you know, like experiential food. And then I had kind of a flash to a kind of time period in my life that it's not like it was forgotten at all, but I hadn't. And I had definitely thought about it a little bit in the context of GNM, but I'd never connected it with the morsel conflict. And okay, so now we're flashing back to me in grade 7. So I don't know what that is, like 11, 12, something like this. And now I need to pause the explanation of an indigestible morsel to give you backstory. So okay, backstory for me around 11, 12, whatever, you know, I'm already very much have the psychology of like the golden child, you know, you like you have to kind of do the best, be the biggest, smartest, whatever, because that's how you get love, you know. That's how you matter in this world. And so that kind of like structure and drive inside of me already established. Okay. And so that's kind of the background of me personally. This will seem irrelevant, but it's very relevant to the story. At that time, one of the biggest charities in Canada was called Free the Children. And it also had kind of a secondary, which was like the business side, I guess, called Me to We. And this the story of this charity is that, you know, a 12-year-old boy named Craig Hielberger was reading the newspaper one day, and he saw this article about this child slave somewhere in Asia who had been murdered for speaking out against child slavery. And like Craig was, you know, kind of very upset by this, and decided to kind of go to his school. And I don't remember exactly how what he did at the beginning, but essentially this was the origins of a charity that came to be known as Free the Children. And you know, he was a 12-year-old boy. It started in his like classroom or whatever, but then the sort of the timing of when this all kicked off was just kind of extremely serendipitous, and it blew up this charity, okay, to being one of the biggest charities in Canada probably. And you know, this 12-year-old boy is meeting like the Dalai Lama and Oprah Winfrey and all the presidents, and you know, like all these amazing kind of famous people, okay, and like overnight is making tons of money for charity, and they're you know, whatever, doing a lot of things overseas. And the whole story, right, is the children helping children. This is, there are not adults involved or driving this, but it is children, the 12-year-old, okay, who started this this massive massively successful charity. And so this had happened, I want to say maybe like a decade before I was about 11, 12, same age, okay? So I very much like identified with the main character in this story, okay, the hero. And so he was much older. The charity was very well established, and their kind of like sister organization called Me to We would basically go around Canada and I think also the States ho hosting these events that were called We Day. And they would basically rent out the biggest stadium they could and pack it full of all of the kind of like elementary, early high school age students. You know, in my case, it was from the province. They rented Rogers Arena. There was like 16,000 kids basically who went. And so, you know, you had to apply, and like only certain, like you had to kind of make it into the group who was going to be sent from your school to go to We Day. So I made it in. We go to We Day, and at this point I'm already like totally enamored by this guy and his story. And you know, he had written a book. He was just like famous, famous. And at the event I was at, like the Dalai Lama was there, Jane Goodall was there. And I mean, at this point, it kind of sickens me what went on at the event. But like, you know, a massive kind of like pump up, like we are going to go save these kids, and it's so bad. Or like Matt, kind of like motivational speaking for like very, very imprintable young children. Okay. And there's like famous musicians that are there. It's like, it's a big, big event. Okay. And then you're basically meant to go back and, you know, fundraise to build a school or something like this, which we did. We raised like, I don't know, $18,000 and built a school. So, okay, why am I giving you? Oh, okay, and final piece to this story, okay, is so I massively like, wow, had this guy and then this whole story on a pedestal when I found out about it. Especially just like, how did he do it? Like, he had no parental help. Like, how did he do something that big and that impactful and that like amazing? You know, like do something so big and extraordinary, and helping what I believed at that point in time, you know, doing something that amazing and good, like so good, you know. And then okay, fast forward, only about like a 2 year or maybe even a year and a half after, and like raised all this money, built the school, also did a bunch of other like fundraising stuff for like foreign countries, okay, then I kind of had a whole, it was my first like awakening, you could say, to just like how corrupt that whole scene is. And then a few years ago, there was actually a big scandal basically about Craig Kielberger, his brother Mark Kielberger, and just the whole Kielberger family, and how like they had just stolen a shit ton of money basically, and that the charity was like super corrupt and everything, that you know, very, very bad basically. And I don't think they exist. They're certainly not seen in the same way they were. It was a big scandal. Okay, so that's all the backstory. So then on the Sunday night, I kind of like flashed to that moment and was like, wow, like, you know, that really, my feeling at that time totally was this like, fuck, like, like he had the idea, you know, he got this newspaper that came to his door, you know, like he was like perfectly timed and brilliant enough and driven enough or whatever to just like do this amazing thing. And obviously, like I could really identify with that because I was like very leadership kind of oriented and kind of naturally inclined towards from a young age. So it kind of felt within my capacity, let's say, or within my potential, in the sense of like, you know, the when you the butter on your bread, the morsel for this inaudible morsel, it does have to feel within reach in some sense, which it did for me. But it was like he took it, you know, like here he's got the book deal and he's on all the, you know, connected to all these people. And like, I'm never going to be able to do something like that new and cutting edge and big. Now that wasn't true, you know, I kind of know from now, like, whatever, there's no, like, there's not a scarcity of these kinds of things, but I don't know precisely what the moment was, but this like jealousy, this real, like fuck this guy, you know, like I want that. Like, I want to be able to do something that impactful. But you did it. And so I can't. Okay. And feeling quite sort of tortured by that. And no, I did go kind of to do, you know, some of that, you know, on a smaller scale at that age until I kind of realized that it was a very morally questionable thing to do, in terms of, you know, fundraising for foreign things, and meddling in foreign, like in other, you know, cultures that you know nothing about. But okay, so essentially, it's challenging to precisely describe it, but I think the morsel is like impact. It's like bigness. It's like doing something like so good. Okay, and this is like what I wanted. That was the most important. I had everything else I could want really at that age. And, you know, I wasn't, but that was a thing that I didn't have, that I was starved for, that I wanted, that was like so important to me. And that sensation. And I could really just feel like how I was relating to him at that age, and to his, you know, the whole kind of story arc match this feeling, this consciousness of an inaudible morsel that I had, you know, come very acquainted with through these other women that I had worked with. And I was just like kind of like, okay, well, that's interesting. And then I also, you know, obviously it just came into my consciousness that, oh yeah, well, he's completely like lost his entire reputation now at this point. And then I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning, and I did a first 2 hour session, and I think it was probably at the end of that just first session where I was like, there's some weird stuff going on in my belly, like I might have to cancel, you know, the following sessions for the day. So I did. I canceled my sessions, and I was trying to think. The only thing it could have been was what I was thinking about last night, and just so deeply kind of feeling into this morsel conduct that I had like touched that inside of me, that what was resonant with that inside of me. And so then I was like, okay, well, I need, let me, you know, I talk a lot to people about like a resolution is almost like, it's helpful to think of it as like this little seedling. And it's very easy to stomp on the seedling and to go back into conflict activity, right? This is the how chronic issues work, right? This constant relapsing. And so I was like, I need to turn this little seedling into, you know, to have deep roots. So I went and was Googling like Craig Hielberger, blah, 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 and like reading all of these, you know, articles or like Reddit threads or whatever about him, and listening to these like podcasts. And I think the thing that I read that really like freed me was this kind of whole section about how actually the involvement of his mother, and that actually it was very driven, very influenced by his mother, Because that had always kind of perplexed me as a child, like, how do you do this as a 12-year-old, you know, like so young? How do you reach such a scale and have such kind of authority? And so there was something about reading that especially just unlocked of like, aha, I knew it. I knew you couldn't have done this entirely of your kind of own your own accord. And so anyways, and then as it's going on, I'm just like feeling more and more unwell. And sorry, you can hear my dogs in the background. Okay, so feeling kind of worse and worse as this is going on. And then I start vomiting. And the mo I have never vomited like that in my life. It was so intense. And it kind of just like kept coming in waves and went on for hours. And then I started having diarrhea. So that's how I knew that it was certainly an unnatural, more so because you know, if it's just vomiting, it can it's a territorial anger conflict. It's the small curvature of the stomach, but and when you have both together, you know it's a morsel. And as much it was like very physically uncomfortable, and I was quite miserable, but also I had this real sense of like every time I went to throw up, I was like, I know what I'm purging, you know, like I, and now that's not the biological purpose of the purge, you know, but it's helpful to think about that, to kind of get you through this highly unpleasant experience. And, you know, kind of by the next day feeling significantly better. So it was kind of like a 24-hour, kind of prime intensity and then not being able to eat for a little bit. And I was kind of like, did I really just resolve this thing? Because that's like, wow, like one of my big life. Like now, I hadn't previously connected, right, inside of me the symptom of constipation, which has never really bothered me overly. And what has bothered me, you know, what has caused me a lot of turmoil in my life is this state of consciousness of like, it is never enough. And I can ne I'm never going to do something big enough, impactful enough, to be satiated, I guess. You're thinking about it that way. And so I knew, right, knowing German New Medicine, that the ruminating thought pattern, the kind of lens of seeing the world, the state of consciousness that emerges from the moment of the conflict shock, that after the resolution, I should no longer be able to access that state of mind, that thought pattern. You know, it's that door is closed in my mind. So even though I've been through the big physical experience, I was still kind of skeptical that I had actually resolved this thing. I wasn't even trying, right? It just kind of happened because I was working with other women. You know, which is the gift of doing this stuff with hundreds of other people, is you get a lot of insight into your own experience of the world. But anyways, you know, became very clear in the following weeks that I felt free of that mental thing and just like, wow, my life's so wonderful. Like this new kind of contentness with and not especially around the like the bigness. Like that was such a like thing that I was kind of a slave to in a lot in my life in different ways and at peaked at different times. It has always matched the times that I've been most constipated is when I'm most kind of caught up in that hunger. So, and I will add, I have not been constipated. I have never had like such easy bowel movements consistently in my life, for sure, that I can, well, I guess maybe before this conflict, but I don't really remember much before 11. It still blows me away to be just like going to the bathroom so easily, and also to feel the shift in consciousness. You know, my story is quite idiosyncratic, perhaps, although I have worked with other women who have a similar or not dissimilar types of morsel conflicts around you know, this type of thing, but it can be anything. It can be the child, it can be the man, it can be praise. It can be to be wanting to be seen as an equal. It can be the house. It really depends on the person. But guarantee, if someone is constipated, there is this sense of lack of like the reason I don't I think the terminology is not maybe the best sort of translation, like indigestible morsel. I think it's helpful to consider, well, why is it indigestible? And I think you have to think about also the specific digestive function of each organ, right? What the stomach does is different than the small intestine is different than the large intestine. So the small intestine, largely is involved in absorption. And so why could something be indigestible once it's kind of broken down and in the small intestine? Well, it could be because it's not there. Okay. You cannot digest the morsel because you don't have it, because you are starved for it. Okay. Could be your mother's love. I mean, it can be many, many, many different. I've seen that actually multiple times, like kind of attention, a specific type of kind of relationship with a mother that is wanted and is not there. So if this is a symptom that you have, then these are th this is where you need to look. And so anytime you have diarrhea, that's okay, I had resolution. I got something that I wanted. Okay, good example. This is a physical example. So the dog you've probably seen going behind me, there's two of them, but the brown lab, Peter, you cannot give him treats or food off your plate or whatever, unless you're fine to clean up after his very, very runny, farty, stinky diarrhea poo. Okay. So, and it's very funny because my mother-in-law, she doesn't kind of know or really align with Jeremy medicine, but she's like, don't give him treats because like he's too sensitive. He can't handle it, right? And knowing GNM, I don't, he's not too sensitive at all to these foods. What it is that he has a morsel conflict. I want the treats. I want the food off your plate. Why are you always giving it to the older dog and not to me? He's the younger one. He doesn't get the same privileges as the dog that's kind of, close to dying, and we always give the extra treats to. So he's starved for, he's got this morsel conflict at any time that he gets the treat. Okay, he gets the thing that he wants. He has explosive diarrhea because he goes into resolution, right? He's in a hanging healing. He's on the track, off the track, on the track, off the track. Okay, so he's not sensitive to these foods at all. He's just going into resolution, right? And this is where misinterpretation happens all the time with symptoms if you don't know the two-phase pattern. And I mean, this is like super rampant in the like alternative health world, right? Where if you eat a food and then you have looser stool or diarrhea or whatever, oh, cut it out. You're too sensitive. You don't have the right gut microbiome. It has nothing to do with that. It's because a lot of people have morsel conflicts related to food. I mean, you can notice it. Like if you have a thing of like, oh, I shouldn't eat chocolate, or I'm not going to eat it, and then you eat it, or you have stuff like that. Pay attention to when you get kind of like farts, because even farts are like you've gone into the resolution. So I'll eat a piece of chocolate if I've been like withholding chocolate from myself for whatever reason, and then I'll eat chocolate, and then I'll have like a stinky fart. Okay, well, TMI maybe, but it's this kind of like small stuff is how you can learn German New Medicine. Okay, it's how you can see for yourself, do these laws work? Is the two-phase pattern accurate? And so a lot of people do have morsel conflicts with food. I also see this very frequently in whenever with mothers whose children, let's say, have food sensitivities. Okay, so for whatever reason, certain foods have been cut out of a child's life early on, and then when they reintroduce the food, the child has a big reaction. Like they eat the food and they have a huge reaction to it. Now, reaction, I should put in, kind of quotation marks, because actually what's going on is that because they've been withheld the certain food because they've been told they're sensitive or whatever, they have a morsel conflict. They feel starved. They're watching the other kids or their siblings or their parents eat the things that they're not allowed to eat. And then when they eat them, what happens? They go into resolution. They get the thing finally, and then they have a big expression of symptoms. And same as very, very common in adults. And so everyone's morsel is different, and it matters to you for different reasons. And the thing that's taking the morsel away from you will also be different for each person. Sometimes it's the person who took your husband away from you or whatever. And sometimes it's a non-physical thing that's kind of stealing, taking away your morsel from you. Okay. So anyway, this is a very kind of like brief intro to the morsel. And look, this is just my way of understanding. This is how I've kind of come to think about it. And I think that the way that I normally hear it described of, it's something you can't stomach, it's something you can't digest. I think if that plays a role, I my personal opinion is that must be in the stomach alone and not in the small intestine or the large intestine, which are responsible for constipation and diarrhea. I think you have to very much consider the what each organ does, right? And this is like that's where it's important to understand the scientific chart, but also you have to understand like how each of those were like all these conflict themes, how do they make sense? Like how did Homer get to that? And in that you really need to, whenever you have a symptom, what does that organ do? Okay. What does it do? What are the many different functions that it does? Because the conflicts are going to be related to the function. Now it gets obviously more abstract and symbolic for us as conscious humans, but it still has the biological kind of root. And so understanding its actual biological purpose is very, very helpful. Okay, I was going to tell more stories, but that one took a little while. So I'm going to wrap up here, and maybe I'll record another episode when I have time for some more aha moments that I've had. I have some good constellation stories, so maybe I'll share those. And for everyone who doesn't know, I am running, well, I just started the second round of a course called Sherlock Your Symptoms. And so this is really about kind of my personal way of understanding the five biological laws in an applied way. That's really my focus is like, okay, it's cool, this whole system, great, lots of people are resonating with it, but then how do you use it? How do you actually use it in your life? How do you understand your symptoms, get to the root of them, and resolve them? And there are many different ways to go about that. I have my way of thinking about it and relating to the laws. And so that's what I'm teaching. And I think the third round is like almost full, judging by the number of emails that I have, because I am capping them because I like to keep the groups small enough to know all of the women. They are female only. So yeah, you can send me a DM or something if you want to be on the list for the next round. I'll probably be opening doors to that in the next couple of weeks, but don't worry, there'll be more. So yeah, I think that's all. Thank you so much for listening. It's like really wild to me to watch the like number of downloads or whatever, just like has been skyrocketing. I don't know how or like who's sharing it or what, why that's happening, because I've been offline and I do a terrible job of marketing this podcast, but it's so inspiring. I can see by the numbers just how, and it's not, I don't think it's really to do with like me or the podcast or anything. It's or how special this particular podcast is, but I think it's about just people are really jiving with GNM and are feeling inspired by the five biological laws, and that's just such a beautiful thing. And I feel so grateful to everyone before me who's put in so much work and time to spreading all this information, and glad to be a part of it. So thank you all for spreading the word, and I'll be back soon with some more stories.